This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Well, the doors have been shut, which is a signal to commence. Welcome, everyone, to what promises to be a very enjoyable afternoon. I'm Michael Pickering. I head up the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander program. This is a significant day for all of us in the program and in the museum, because we have, we think, achieved a breakthrough in exhibitions and in the delivery of histories. So we hope you enjoy it as well. I'd like to acknowledge the Ngunnawal people, the traditional owners of the lands in which the museum is built. The Ngunnawal are people, we greatly appreciate their contribution to the museum's operations and life. They've been active participants in the work we do. I'd also like to acknowledge all those people who were involved in the civil rights movement in the past, the activists, the campaigners, the supporters, and those people who, while not taking sides, did at least have the courtesy to listen. I think what we see today is built upon their efforts. I'd also like to acknowledge you, the audience. By being here today, you continue that tradition of engagement and collaboration that is so essential to achieving rights for all people. We have some very eminent speakers here this afternoon, some participants. I'd first of all like to acknowledge Rachel Perkins, a leading Australian filmmaker, an Aranda and Kalkadoon woman, Martin Ballingurry, Gumbungir elder from Barraville in New South Wales, and Barraville is a central place in the history of civil rights in Australia, certainly. And Professor John Maynard, a Warramy man, who's also our Master of Ceremonies for the day, and head of the Wallatooka School of Aboriginal Studies at the University of Newcastle, and an eminent author and speaker in his own right. And of course, I'd like to acknowledge Brother Black, who will be appearing very shortly. I won't keep you long. I want to say that hopefully you've all seen the exhibition and will continue to revisit it. Hopefully you'll all go and look at the website. We're proud of this exhibition because not only do we have that exhibition, we have the website and other devices deliver the strong history. It's been a difficult exhibition to get up. We've gone through a difficult political period where any mention of Indigenous or civil or rights in the same sentence was frowned upon. So there's been some careful manoeuvring. Looking at the exhibition, some people might see it as a leftist statement, a radical statement. And it isn't. The museum is not about being radical. The museum is about staying true to history. The stories that we tell, we believe, are true to history. They are impartial and true to history. And it's the stories themselves that are significant. The passion you see is the passion of the story. The exhibition will tour. It'll tour nationally, again, accompanied by all that other information that's often missing. Any exhibition is just 10% of the story. We hope you enjoy this afternoon. Thank you for coming to the museum. A special preliminary thanks to our speakers. Once again, we hope you enjoy it. And now I'd like to invite Brother Black to kick off the real proceedings. Thank you.
Cheers. Yes, yes, Brother Black, coming at ya. Check it out now, one time, we turn it out here. Yes, well it's Brother Black, rapping on the fat track, entertaining the pack. Well, from here to the outback, much love for them streets in my neighborhood. I would, I could, I should, I bring a chunk of real good funk to leave your pump. Now I'm cruising through Punch Bowl. Well, who stole the soul? Check. Syndicate from the southwest. So here comes the information from the front desk. I bail down the back street in the heat as my feet pound down the trunk like an athlete at a track meet. Get ready to kick your dip with the brothers and sisters. Are you with me?
It's the hardest sound anyone has heard.
All right, check it out, check it out, check it out. Hip hop, non-stop, one drop. Here we go.
There you go.
Got
my back and track in my backpack. Release the tension to a brand new dimension. The air's feeling fine as I recite my rhyme about a million times till I'm getting it right now. Hit the venue, time for a sound check. Mr. Soundman, respect, here's my specs. It's kind of funny, through the years that I've grown up, learning tricks of my trade, gigging non-stop. Who's this fella? You start to wonder who comes from the land down under. Well, I'm Sydney born and bred, my friend. Look out, rocking your way, I'm coming at you full steam ahead.
Like this.
Truck the black. More
come on, you can rip back.
Track. Check it out.
Yeah, make some
reminiscing about the time I went to Charles Creek, hanging out in Alice for a couple of weeks. The purpose of the project was to make desert raps, planting seeds of hip-hop in the outback. Over the years I've worked together with so many crews. To all the parks mob in Adelaide, this track's for you. Or can you mob winning the deadly down the Opera House? 3-on-3 across the nation, brother Black. I turn it out, come on, we turn it out, yeah, I turn it out, come on, we turn it out, we turn it out, we turn it out, we turn it out, yeah, yeah, we turn it out, we turn it out, we turn it out, we turn it out, yeah, yeah, we turn it out, 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 we turn it
All right, thank you. That's right, I'm Brother Black, and before I go on, I just want to pay my respects to the traditional landowners, and on behalf of the traditional landowners, I want to welcome our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters to Aboriginal country.
Police wearing full riot gear have been pelted with Molotov cocktails, fire tanks,
and trains.
The train station has been closed ever since the riot began 8 hours ago.
It's about that time.
You
see, brothers got to put it down. It's more than a rhyme. This thing called Australian history, it's more than that. It's my identity.
I've got to put this down. It's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population. Gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population.
Deep down in my heart, I know it's a time. There's no doubting that I'll pour it all out, saying more than a rhyme. I'm keeping time. My brothers and sisters, I pass on the message. Stay true to yourself, look out for each other. And why would you wonder? For no more crying mothers, I stand in the front line for my people's struggle. So come on,
I gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population. Gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight
now,
for the rights of our population.
I've gotta put this down, cause it's more than a feeling. Can you feel me? Brothers kicking truce for free. About my ancestry, my family tree, my people's destiny. From the desert to the sea, hoping that you mob can understand this. A lifetime of struggle I'm here to express. My mother to my aunties, my uncles and my cousins were wronged by the system, we rose against it. Seed was planted in this new breed. See, I'm standing on stage in front for you to see. That's right, they call me BB. I'm born and raised in Sydney, with the blood of the Murray people pumping through me. I'm calling out to my people up north. I'm calling out to my people in the west. I'm calling out to my people in the red centre. Living the dream time forever.
I've gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population. I've gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population. I've gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling. The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the Indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population. Gotta put this down, it's more than a feeling.
The message that I send, pass on to your friends. A new generation, the indigenous nation. We fight for the rights of our population.
Cause I fight.
Police have surrounded the angry mob, but are keeping it safe distance because of the volatile situation.
For the rights.
Between senior police and Aboriginal community leaders are continuing to try and resolve
because
the situation peacefully.
These young people are
That's
very,
why I fight.
Very upset
yeah,
about what
because
happened to this young man. And they're very upset.
For the rights
of
the population.
Thank you. Okay, this next song, I was lucky enough to, over 12 months ago, I was lucky enough with, through Reconciliation Australia, I was teamed up with a member from Australian hip-hop group, the Hilltop Hoods, Suffer MC. And it was basically to make a track with Indigenous and non-Indigenous artists making a statement about reconciliation. So I was lucky enough to go down to Adelaide, record with the boys. I wrote the lyrics. He produced the beat. So check it out. Here it is, More Than Keeping Integrity. Yes, yes, one time. One, two, Brother Black. Keeping integrity. Check, check. It's time to rise and reconcile in yourself. In life, you're fine. You're reconciling yourself. That's why I had to do the rhyme within me. To reconcile with myself, keeping integrity. It's time to rise. Yes, in life, you're fine. Well, come on. That's why I had to do the rhyme within me. Well, check it out. Kicking back, thinking about this nation and its situation. Deep in my mind, all the generations. My people, they're right, my people, they're fight. Circumstance still affects us every day, every night. All the way down into the very core. Staying true to myself and the cause we force. How do we conform with law and order? When cops photoshop elders and ignore us. Aggression from our protectors, ties forever severed. Never mind, I'm taking it on, storm is weathered. It's been that way forever, ever and ever. Got me on the run, memories now a mum left alone without a son. Constantly racing and chasing our kids at a short cost. Taking lives like they were a trophy for their boss. Our leadership has no idea cause they're out of touch. Cause what? Time to rise and reconcile in yourself. In life you're fine, you reconcile with yourself. That's why I had to do the rhyme within me. To reconcile with myself, keeping integrity. It's time to rise. Yes, in life you're fine. Well come on, that's why I had to do the rhyme within me. My brothers put in the call. I had to do this, got my first crack, you're doing good, Black. No time to retract and get back with my old ways. I got me a couple of kids, I'm looking forward to new days. We play under the sunshine, everything is fine. I'll tell you what I can about my life and our tribe, so you can be just like me. One, two, three, I'm a proud Murray, so take it to the other side of the family tree. When your poppy sailed across the sea and into Sydney. Yes, he is white, no, he's not a convict. Yes, I'm sure of it, adopting this country. He went and fought for it, doing what he had to do, going to war, every Anzac. Day. We remember all, this is the country, the place where you belong. Gotta know where your mob comes from to be strong. It's time to rise and reconcile in yourself. In life you're fine, you're reconciling yourself. That's why I had to do the rhyme within me. To reconcile with myself, keeping integrity. It's time to rise, yes, in life you're fine. Well come on, that's why I had to do the rhyme within me. That hunger's content, set to let fly. Rhymes in my mind, they're keeping my sight bright for black and white. You decide, unity, you got the time. Can you feel that pain from the past? Boy, it's getting me, drilling me, killing me. Going to extremities, I had to put it down. A is with me. Without my music, I'd lose it. In states of confusion, that's brewing, undoing. But I am pursuing, ensuing. So preservation, I'm taking hold. Keeping warm from the cold. Journey back to the fold, the lonely stroll. Had to learn this one on my own. Maggie's work's done, bees grown, she's reaping what was so. Telling you life. Don't overcompensate. The mind you think you gotta educate. Don't want a sorry. It doesn't bother me. It's just reality. Come live my life and see what we gotta reconcile for my people. One time, Uncle Martin. Too deadly. Thank you. Oh.
Am I on? Yes. Okay. Thanks very much, brother. He's ducked out there. That was a great intro and a great way for us to start this session. I mean, the brother follows a very proud, long tradition of Aboriginal people using music as a medium, certainly to get a political voice out to wider Australia. and a very great way of doing it. I guess this session is an informal one. I think we're here just to have a discussion, an informal discussion, our thoughts on where we are at today as far as contemporary political issues for Aboriginal people are, where we've come from and where we're at. I guess I'm to start the session off, but I guess we can just exchange as we go along. Rachel can have input and then Uncle there. I'd also like to begin by respectfully acknowledging the traditional custodians and their ancestral lands within which I'm most honoured to be a visitor. For me, and I said I can only speak for my behalf and my thoughts, I mean, the exciting thing about being here yesterday and seeing the wonderful exhibition From Little Things, Big Things Grow, I think for me that's where we've got to go back to. What our people were saying, what our people stood up for in the past. There's so much message over there. There's great pride over there. There's great inspiration. And not just for the Aboriginal people that were prepared to stand up over so many decades and voice an opinion and make a stand against the oppression and the prejudice and the oppression in this country. But also the non-Indigenous people. I mean, you saw pictures over there of Stan Davey and also Jack and Jean Horner and quite a number of other people that have stood up, been prepared to stand up alongside our people and show courage in that respect. So there's been a long, proud history of that. I have to say today, I think we're at a crossroads. And I guess, again, I can only speak for my own position, sort of filled with slightly depressed and frustration of where we are as Aboriginal people today and certainly where we're going politically. I think that long, proud tradition of Aboriginal people and politics and their connection to the grassroots community, I think has all but disappeared into memory and history. In reality, I mean, that long history, and you go over to that exhibition and see that, I think in recent decades that has basically disappeared. The Aboriginal political voice has been silenced and has been taken off the street. I think we, again, I'll go back to the non-Indigenous involvement. I think that's critical. Even back in the 20s, my grandfather said, you know, that we need to get the message to the wider white populace of what's happening in this country, and we need to gather their support, mobilise that support. And we've followed that tradition with Rachel's dad, Charlie Perkins, and the white students on the bus and the Gurindji walk off at Wave Hill when they managed to get a lot of trade unionists and the media on site and the 67 referendum. The Tent Embassy here, there were a lot of white students involved with that. And I think our swan song as far as that movement was concerned and that interaction was the 1988 bicentennial. And I think from that point down, we've sort of slid off the radar, if you like, and as I said, in some sense been silenced, which is a tragedy in itself. Why has that happened? I mean, I said there's frustration from my point of view. I mean, there are divisions, there are factions, and there are infighting in Aboriginal communities. That is a given and something that we have to look at and really get on top of. Rachel mentioned yesterday in her discussion at the opening of the exhibition the sense of unity, and it's something that I've been speaking about for quite some years now. We need to go back to that national perspective and that national front for Aboriginal people to all mobilise together to effect change. The sad reality is today that's not there. And I don't want to be too controversial, but last week Gulleroy in a newspaper account in The Australian made the point that the problems he's facing up in Cape York are because of the urban blackfellas who are sitting in coffee shops sipping lattes and stirring up trouble basically for his community up there. From my perspective, the brother, maybe he's been taken out of context, but the reality is issues facing Aboriginal people right across this country and the destruction we face is widespread. It's not just confined to remote communities, it's in rural settings and it's in urban settings. The health issues, the education issues, the unemployment issues, the youth suicide, the drink, the alcohol, the domestic violence, that's everywhere. That is everywhere across the country in urban, rural and remote settings. It's not just confined to a certain space and that's it. And I'm not saying all communities are like that. I have to say because that is one misnomer. I mean, the sort of the way the press goes that all Aboriginal communities are dysfunctional, that is not the case. But what I'm saying is you can't just confine it to the rural, to the remote space. So I think we really need to get on top of that stuff and show a sense of unity that we are all going to march together, pull together where we can get some strength and actually implement some change. Tom Calmer's recommendations are coming up, and I think that's one thing that we really do need is a national Indigenous body. Again, go back to the 20s, that was one of the pushes from my grandfather's organisation. They said they needed a national Indigenous body to oversee Indigenous affairs. I'm not sure if Tom hasn't been given a real lot of room to move with the body that he's probably envisioned and what he would probably hope to see. But I think, if again from my perspective, if we do have a national Indigenous body, it must have some power to do something. And again, it might be wild dreams from my perspective, but I think we probably should have two representatives of that body to sit in federal parliament. You know, I think that's the same as they do in New Zealand with the Māori. I also think that we need policy impacted by both parties, Labor and Liberal, need to have a bipartisan approach to Indigenous affairs. And I think the importance of that is that there has to be a 10-year plan that can be reviewed. You know, reviewed in 5 years and reviewed in 7 years. But what we've had is decades and decades and decades. Governments come in, they put policy in place, they go out, the next mob come in and rip it all apart again. We've just started going up a path, and then we've got to go back to square one again and told we're going up a different path. And it goes on and on and on. And we don't get anywhere. The reality is we need long-term policy in place that we can actually measure what is success or what is working. And again, I think that's an important step to take. What are the answers? As I said, I think all coming together is probably the most crucial thing for me, and that we all do pull together and try and make some change in for our communities and for our people. But I might move along now and ask Rachel.
Respect for the elders.
Well, I agree. Yeah. Brother, you and him are going to do a duet, I thought, earlier with Brother Black, but that hasn't happened. All right, eh?
Well, where do we start? You know, I think about what you just said. I'll take on board all what you just said. I've looked at the government structure for a long time, the three tiers of government, state, federal, and local government. And I say, let's get rid of state, but never mind. But, you know, we just have the grassroots lot and the federal government. That's just my own candid opinion. But, you know, we mentioned about the education, where we're going with education. We're no further ahead than we was 40 years ago, you know. So I grew up in Barrable, you know, where, you know, the assimilation time was happening, you know. I jumped the little black fence, into the mainstream, you know, and we were talking about is there anything happening in the curricula now, as is, you know. I don't know, I'm not too sure where we're at with education. I've hung around education system for a long time, in the education system with TAFE as well, and I feel we're still going nowhere. You know, we're taking one step forward, one, two back. And that is the general feeling with me. I'm a counsellor in a Shire Council, local government level, and I've seen a lot of stuff that I'm not happy with. You know, I'm an angry person, I'm a happy person. I can be any person you want me to be, but, and I can be a Brother Black too, but, you know, radical, you know. Because when this lady's father came to Barrowwood many years ago, you know, I was only a 13-year-old kid, you know. And got on the bus, I'll go for a ride on the bus, you know, the Freedom Ride bus, went down there. And went down to town to the theatre, didn't know where we were going, just one of the kids, you know, go down the picture, you know. So anyway, there was a 16-year-old girl went in, and of course they needed another kid to go in. Charles said, come on, Martin. So Martin, come on, and I'll go and buy the ticket. So Anne went up and bought the ticket, sat in the theatre, sat at the back, and sat in the white fella seat, like deadly, you know, with cushioning. Yeah, so that was the highlight of my life at the time. For a brief moment, until the police came in and ushered us out politely with the baton poking in the back. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Because I was looking down at the film down in the exhibition, and I seemed to trying to work out who that copper was. So I don't know what's with him, but I got a fair idea it was. But anyway, I feel, you know, Aboriginals in Australia is, people say indigenous, I'm not akin to that word. I'm an Aboriginal. My mother was Aboriginal, my father was Aboriginal. When I was born, I was an Aboriginal. So I believe I'm native to this land, you know, with that indigenous perspective. I don't know, there's a lot of people got different things. Even reconciliation was mentioned here. It's a long, hard road. Maybe I'm rambling on too long.
No, you keep talking.
Now, me and Aunt was having a yarn last night about a lot of the deadly stuff we've done back in the early days, you know. Some radical stuff, some not so radical, but a little bit good, you know. And it's interesting how far we've come, you know. Not very far, I'm sorry to say, but we only took 1.5 step forward. We're still back here. And we're still living in the dreaming, I'm afraid. Yeah, that's just my personal opinion, because, I mean, I've seen a lot of our great leaders of this country, you know, and I've seen what they've went through, you know, and I've done studies in the field of where they went and how they went, and now a lot of our own people had to knock them for doing what they did. Mm. And they got up their butt and done something for their people, you know. Well, look at me. I'm a tokenistic black fella in a local government area, you know. And of course, you know what I'm going to get called, because I'm married to a white woman, you know. And so it's just black and white issue, you know. So it's interesting where I'm at in the council, because there's a lot of things in there. I just want to get out of it, you know, because it's like I'm pushing uphill, you know. So. But I'm going to hang in there for another 3 years, you know. This is my second term, so I'm a proud Aboriginal man, Goombanga man, for that fact. You know, I was the first Indigenous Goombanga person to be elected in the local government up home there in the Nambucca area. So, and this is a, you know, I didn't realize we were going to get it in front of a lot of people. You see these things on TV, you know, on ABC. So, yeah. I thought, oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know what I was coming down and got up the plane down here, freezing cold. And somebody was supposed to meet me out there, but they did, pick later, came. And then, no name mentioned Troy. But anyway, yeah, getting back to where, you know, far Aboriginals come, as far as I'm concerned, we're no further than we was so many years ago, you know. So I don't know what you're feeling on that, Rachel. Maybe you can iterate. You've been out there and done a bit more than me, I think. Mine just got a bit greyer, that's all.
Yeah,
well, that's amazing progress. I mean, from 65 on the Freedom Ride bus to being a councillor. I mean, that's an amazing achievement, just in Barrowville alone. I mean, that's a really needs to be applauded, don't it?
That's true.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
Applaud.
Bless you, us too.
Thank you.
Was that the theatre seat that's down there in the exhibition
that
you were on?
Yeah, that's the one down there. I'll take you girls down there later, come down and have a look at the Barrowville Theatre. It's pretty well straight now, but when I was going in, it was sort of leaning one way. I don't know whether if it was broke on purpose or whether we sat on it and broke it. Yeah. We got blamed for it anyway. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Sorry,
Rachel. I feel a bit unqualified, really, to, you know, to have a view on all of this, because I sort of, a bit of a coward in a way. I'm sort of a filmmaker and sort of work in that area of media, I suppose, or I suppose try and have influence in, you know, if we're talking about protest. Mm. I suppose I've evolved that form of protest into what I feel I can do, which is, I suppose, you know, tell stories on behalf of our people to them, yeah, you know, and to the wider Australian community, so that, you know, that great thing that often causes racism, you know, ignorance, mm, can somehow try and slowly be shifted. And yep, I think we've got a long way to go, but I think, you know, I think the education system is changing rapidly, and hopefully with the national curriculum, you know, we'll really achieve putting Indigenous studies as part of Australian history and, you know, cementing it in there. But I think, you know, that's up to us to try and make sure that happens. Yeah. But in terms of the sort of subject of the what we're here to discuss, protest, yeah, and its contemporary forms, that's right, Jay, isn't it? I mean, I spent, you know, because I'm Charlie Perkins' daughter, I spent my entire life going to protests and loved it, you know, nothing more we love than a demo. And so I, you know, I've been to a lot of great ones where we've done fantastic things and, well, not me done fantastic things, but I've looked at people do fantastic things. Like I remember Michael Nelson Jugamara threatening to take the centrepiece out of the big ceramic or stone painting, you know, that they'd made in Parliament House. And he had a you know, some sort of axe tomahawk thing. And he didn't actually, he was there with Dad because they were, of course, countrymen from Central Australia. And, you know, he said, Michael Nelson didn't want to actually take the piece out and because it would have affected, you know, it was a big dreaming, and to destroy a dreaming painting that he'd put in there and ceremoniously would be very bad. But they wanted to make a statement. I can't remember what the... It was something about, I don't know whether it was the Land Rights Act at the time or whatever it was, whatever we were there for. Maybe it was a lead-up to the Bicentennial, I can't remember. But, you know, he just sort of pretended to do it, and then they hid the axe. But in the paper the next day it was like, you know, Aboriginal vandalizers dreaming thing at Parliament House, you know. And it got the front page and it worked really well. And, you know, so many other things I've been at and seen, these great, you know, protests storming the doors at Parliament House, and, you know, a lot of it was often bluff and bluster and letting off steam, but it certainly attracted national media attention, and being part of it, you felt like, you know, that's what you had to do to be heard in those days. You had to yell and scream and be united and be strong and gather the people and get the numbers in and, you know, get the placards and work out what you were saying and put the message across really strongly. And they did that, I think, very effectively. And I suppose today it's very different. And, you know, we don't have those street protest things in the way that we used to. There's been some return to that with the intervention, you know, particularly in Sydney, where I live, you know, in Redfern. And I know there's been some in Central Australia and, of course, in Canberra at the Sorry Day celebrations recently. Not being an expert, but being someone who's been around a lot of those things, the mood has changed. Yeah. And perhaps the mood has not only changed amongst our own people, but it's changed amongst the people who, you know, are witnessing and supporting or reporting on or whatever our protest movement. Yeah. It's definitely a change. But I think that's a change that's happened sort of globally. I mean, I think from the 60s through to the 80s, and look, I'm no expert, so I'm just raving on it. So the 60s through the 80s, it was quantified by that street protest movement. And, you know, globally we've seen that evolve to a different sort of level where perhaps people have gone into the inside, you know, perhaps in a way, and worked for change within bureaucracies and within government and within, you know, organisations that they've set up and try to enact change in very practical legislative ways in their communities or federally or however it is. But at the same time, I agree with you. I think that we've, in recent times, you know, for me, I'm not a leader and I don't have the guts to be one. But I want to follow someone. You know, I think we need leadership now. Yeah, that's right. And because I, you know, the issues are complex, extremely complex, and we need people, you know, who understand the system, who have a grasp of history, who have connection with their people and their communities, are in touch with them, and are sound thinkers and hopefully visionaries and can cut through the complexity and communicate to us, you know, what the shifts in policy and the shifts in politics. I mean, we are in desperate need of that. And I think we have those people, some of them, but I think the conflict that we now have in the recent since the intervention between our leadership is debilitating, yes. It's depressing for us as a people, and it's not doing us any good. Just on the net last night, I came home from the opening, and two fantastic leaders, Sam Watson from Brisbane, who was in Black Panther and in the, 1970s, was calling to, calling to people to go and protest at Noel Pearson's opening of the Brisbane Writers Festival. And I just felt like, here's these two Murrays of great intellect, yep. Great capacity, I believe, in conflict with each other in public, and that was the protest. And I just thought, and I've watched, I know all these people, so I'm going to say their names, and we're good friends with them, Larissa Berent and Noel arguing, two great minds, Marcia Langton arguing back, these are the people I rely on to help me think about what we need to do in this country, and there's conflict. And I think it's, I think that, as you say, the great thing about that period between, say, the 60s and 70s, there was internal conflict in the 80s, but there was a national
agenda.
There was a national pan-Indigenous sort of agenda, and people came from all across the country, Murrays, remote people, New South Wales mob, Central Australia, Torres Strait Islanders, and at the Fikatsi table, on other organisational tables, whether it be land councils or so many meetings, they all were always flying off to, going to. They managed to get some sort of cohesion, and they fought with each other, but at the end of the day, they had a common vision. And I think our people still have a common vision. We want to improve the conditions of our people. We know that they're bad, yeah. But I think the difference of purpose and the egos are getting in the way.
I agree.
So, that's a bit of a rant. but I find it very frustrating,
yeah.
Because I think we have, very talented people. But that's sort of getting off the subject. Really, the subject is about protest. And the thing that I feel is that protest is only effective. Protest, in a way, is activism. Activism and protest are very linked, obviously. And to be an effective activist, you need to be... You can't be the Lone Ranger often.
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to have much influence. If I went and sort of chained myself to a tree, outside Parliament House, no one would really care less, because I don't, I'm not a leader and I don't have that following. I don't have the status and the support and the leadership qualities that make an activist effective. I've seen effective activists draw people together from all around the country, pick up the phone and bring the mob in. And that's what effective activism does. And it moves the people with them, because if you can't bring the people with you, you're not gonna succeed. And you need, power in numbers. So I think, what we need is good leadership, because good leadership really means good activism. And good activism means, change, affecting change. So I think those things are very linked.
Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of programs in place to encourage Indigenous leadership, and that's a great thing. I think things have changed a lot.
Yes.
And I think things have improved a lot, actually. but I think, of course, some fundamental things are still not progressed. So.
Yeah.
So that's sort of my sort of thoughts on it.
I think you sell yourself a little bit short on the activism, because, things have changed and there's different mediums, and certainly through film, and documentary, you are making a statement in what you do. So, that's probably a way we've got to look in the future is, again, it may not be going and chaining yourself up to a tree, although you never know how many people might turn up.
Hopefully you'll turn up. Mum will turn up, but that'll be it.
But you're right. So what is the next step then? What is the next step? Well, what have we got to look at? Is it the internet? Is it film? Is it drama? I've mentioned music before. But, and how do we heal these rifts of today? That's the big question out there, because while we're just ripping each other apart, we cannot affect change.
Mm.
And exactly the same thing as I started with, the frustration, and you feel so depressed. But looking at this stuff, because it suits.
But what Brother Black was doing, he was singing some songs. I think Yeah, people need to hear what he's saying. Reconcile with yourself first before you can venture on and become a leader of what you're about. You do video, movies and stuff. I do it too. I do videography. I make movies just on a small scale, just showing the little bit of Aboriginals and the white fella mixing up in issues at home. And then that's on NAIDOC Day, little NAIDOC Day. We have once a celebration, once a year thing. And filling with a good media to get out there. Mentorship, you're talking mentorship. You know, we've got the leaders out there. There's a lot of leaders out there, and I think they need shaking up and need to start talking about what we need, you know. And they know what we need, but all they've got to do is just get up and talk up and meet up and thing. Remember, I was surprised that the bit of footage of the Freedom Ride they had down here, and the person gave me a bit of background on how they obtained it, you know. Yeah. Apparently it was in the ASIO file, I believe, or something. So, you know, so whatever. Yeah, they're probably doing something on me now, you know. So somebody out there, I guaranteed. Yeah, because I just talking to Brother Black and I got a, this funny message, you know. So I don't know what it means. So, and then it's not in my text, see? So it just, maybe it's something in this area. So I don't know. It's just, it's on my mobile. I'll show you later. But anyway, yeah, I don't know. You know, I think, well, as you said, Reg, we did come forward maybe one and a half, a little bit more step than I anticipated. But I've looked at a lot of stuff and I still say we're not where we are. Should be at. There's a lot of kids out there that wants to take the lead, but they've got to start having confidence in themselves. Remember, we're combating with drugs and alcohol, and which is a big. My society, my mission up in Barrow, where I come from, is pretty well. We're trying to work with them kids all the time. I do work with them kids all the time. I've been doing it for the last. Yeah, 20-odd years, yeah, 30-odd years, 40 years I've been working around, and no sooner you get them there, they get shy and, you know, oh, shame, oh, this shame factor come back. Mm. And these are smart kids. These are very smart kids. They're very intelligent, you know. Mm. And these are the kids that the kids ostracize for being behavioural, you know. Mm. So we're talking about education. Education got to be looked at through the behavior of the Aboriginal kids, yeah. Because it's a behavior thing. I know there's a lot of smart kids that been. I've been around the education system. I've seen a lot of smart kids who come from the behavioral school, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and 'cause they was, you can't say it on TV, but they was naughty boys and girls, you know. Yeah. But they come around and it's been around and they got good jobs, and they leading in the mentorship with the program that I work with. And then you got the other group that wants to tear that bit of work down. Yeah. And this is the combat we've got all the time. So it's just not only in Barrow, it's right throughout the country, you know. I think, you know, as we talked about that, that stuff that would happen in Northern Territory, you know. Yeah, I think that was a big land grab in itself. The government, you know, I'll speak out against the government because they spoke. I still say, you know, this, we've got this national anthem that says Advance Australia Fair. Sorry. How fair is it, you know, to the first people of this country? You know, that is a question, you know. You can be from another nation, yeah. And you get treated better. So I see what's happening up in the streets of Barrow. Who get hassled by the cops, you know? I made front page up on there on about, you know, police not fulfilling their job, you know, or doing their job. So what did they do? They go and hassle the kids on the streets, you know, before they go to school, you know, or even after, you know. And the ones that go to school, you know, they and even some of the older people, they just go and get their grog and go sit there and then they go home, you know. But they, just to show me that they're doing their job, I said, come on, boys, go away, leave them alone, they only give me grog and go home, I said. And that's all they're doing, you know. Yeah. They're not creating the problem, so. But anyway, that's only just one smidgen of aspect, so. I know we've got a long way. Yeah,
I think that's an important point. I mean, certainly the future is the kids, and I mean, that's got to be our most important consideration. Kids, yes. And how we direct them and how we encourage them and how we inspire them. Education, obviously, is a major thing. I mean, being in university myself these days and you know, head of an Indigenous centre, the reality is most of the people in academia today, Indigenous people, haven't come from privileged educational backgrounds. Most of us come into education late in life. I mean, for myself, I mean, I was 40, and there's a lot of people like me, I mean, don't have fond memories of your school years. So, I mean, the Aboriginal people there, we've sort of fought to overcome the disadvantage we come through in the education system, where we weren't encouraged and there was nothing in the school curriculum about Aboriginal people, culture or history, to really strive to get an education at a later stage. I think the next generation coming is going to be where the big change come through. And I actually said to people, I think it was over lunch or dinner the other night, that Newcastle's hosted the Indigenous Engineering Summer School for the last 2 years, and you have 27 Indigenous kids from around the country coming down and really just blown away, you know, so articulate, so eloquent speaking, so confident. You think, man, this is where the change is coming from. But we're still in this process at the moment of treading water, waiting for that sort of, I guess, revolution to happen.
I think we tread water too long now. I think it's time to stand up and start doing, because I'm getting too old to be doing the stuff that I need to do, that need to achieve in my life, you know. I would like our young people to stand up and take the fight on. As Auntie said, we were talking about last night, you know, how young kids need to stand up and take the fight. Onward, you know, as is Rachel, she's doing it in film. And I do it in film, council, a bit of everything, you know. So I've got my finger in all the pies a little bit, you know. Yeah. So if we're going to have, you know, we've got, as you mentioned, the Tom Kalma, Karma, whatever. FI was given to move with whatever he said, you know, with his portfolio, you know. This is what we've got to work on, the Toms. We've got to work on the Toms about how to get that message out, you see. I mean, it's already been mentioned about, what's that, you know, Pingu fella, you said?
Galloway.
Yeah. Whatever. Well, you know, all that, you know, that still need to be addressed to all them kind of stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, we all need to be heading in the same direction.
As Rachel said earlier, we all one jump up all the time. One jump up over here, one over here. I'm not being rude, but, you know, one person, they jump up. You know, you got to jump up unified together. I know, because you get results. It's not protest. They don't call it. If it's a protest, you'd be in jail. But they call it people power today, you know. I know, because you get things done by people power. So people, if you're going to protest, call it people power. So you get results. Maybe we should go that way, people power.
Any thoughts or ideas, Rachel, or where to from here, I mean, in that sense?
Because you're the younger person here, so.
Yes, so I'm meant to know everything. No, I'm saying all the leaders are meant to know everything. Abdicating responsibility. I don't know. I think, you know, I've sort of seen people, you know, the older generation, work for so long. You know, like there's a lot of discussion at the moment about how communities are so dysfunctional, and that none of the policies of the 70s, 80s, and 90s have worked. Mm-hmm. You know, that seems to be the theme of the moment. And you know, we see that these, you know, when you look at history, you look at the change from protectionalism to assimilation, and then assimilation to self-determination, and then from self-determination to reconciliation. And every, 30 years or something, the last policy's howled down as, you know, backward and not working, and then the next one's brought in, and that's, you know, taken for the next 30 years, and then that last one's howled down. And look, there's more people who are expert than me in the audience, like Peter Reid, who I'm hoping will hear from you in a second, Peter. who's actually studied this stuff. You know, I've only just read his books and listened to it around the kitchen table. But, you know, so perhaps that's a shift that's happening, you know, that we're in that phase where there's a lot of condemnation for what's gone before. But, you know, at the same, you can't say that, you know, the people who protested for land rights didn't also have in their mind, you know, health issues.
Yes.
Because they set up, you know, medical associations all around the country to deliver health services to Aboriginal communities and Indigenous, you know, and Torres Strait Islanders. So it's not like they were naive and thought land rights will solve everything. Yeah. You know, at the same time, they were setting up in Aboriginal hostels. You know, I might sound like I'm defending my father's generation, and probably I am, because I saw a lot of the hard work and success that's come out of that, you know. So I think it's quite easy for people to sit now and condemn those gone before them, people who were, you know, who did climb the gates in Brisbane and pull the bloody gates down when there was no Land Rights Act in the Queensland, you know.
Yeah.
And those people, you know, people that have been condemned since, like Mick Miller and Clary Grogan and Joe McGuinness and people like that, they spent their lives fighting for land rights and at the same time, you know, hostels and Aboriginal legal services and a whole range of things. So I think there is a... It's very easy to condemn what's happened. At the same time, you know, I agree with people like Noel who say that we cannot, you know, blame everybody else for our problems and we can't blame the historical context. You know, we've got to take responsibility for ourselves and our communities. And look, a lot of people probably disagree with me here, and you know, but I think that has a lot of weight as well.
Yeah.
And I think there is evidence of that as well. Like in Newindamoo, for instance, and a lot of those Central Australian communities, they are dry communities, and they've been dry because people have wanted them to be dry because they know the effects of alcohol and violence, and they've been fighting against having these liquor licences issued. You know, you look at Central Australia, the Women's Night Patrol, which started as a voluntary organisation, and the women trying to, you know, do something about grog in their community. So at the same time, we need to acknowledge what has been achieved and what has been done, rather than say self-determination is a failure, you know, and things like that. Because self-determination is very important and still important. So, you know, it's a very complex time, I think, for us. And I don't know. I don't think there is an easy way forward. You know, like one question I was asked yesterday by a journalist: "What's next for Aboriginal people?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't know." You know, that's a bloody big question, and how can I possibly answer it? You know, but I think that things are complex. Like, you know, the intervention is complex. You know, if you Central Land Council, for instance, has done a lot of research into what actual people who are the recipients of these intervention policies think about them. And if you look at the data, you know, they are in favour of a lot of the intervention programs. So, you know, you have to look at what the people are thinking on the ground as well. And I don't think anyone ever wanted, and you look at what people actually say, like if you read what Noel Pearson says, he says that he never agreed with the rollout of it, the compulsory rollout of it.
Yep.
But people are saying that he does. And that's the thing about leadership, isn't it? You've got to put yourself out there, say what you think. Your words will be misinterpreted, used by people, you know, like his words have been twisted by so many people and, you know, reapplied and reinterpreted, and that's what happens. That's politics. But where am I getting to? I don't know what the next answer is. That's why I'm not standing up saying things like people like being like Noel and Larissa. That's why I'm making films that, you know, educate. I'm doing what I can, my contribution, which is to educate and also entertain in these very grim times.
Yeah. I think you're right too. I mean, as I started with, I mean, we need to look to the past and take great pride in that, is what I said. What people have achieved over a long period of time, particularly self-determination, that was a platform of my grandfather's back in the 20s. And the reality is, I mean, you mentioned education and health. At the Kempsey Conference in 1925, where 700 Aboriginal people were in attendance over 3 days and all the paper presented by Aboriginal people, health and education were on the agenda and were papers delivered then. So it does show such a long history of this stuff. But still, you know, again, you have to look at it in the context of where we are, that we're still fighting for the same things in many respects. Maybe at the same place, but we're still fighting for that sort of equality and that justice.
I think a lot of problem too is that the agenda is being led by, you know, because the people aren't on the streets and perhaps the leadership isn't as vocal as it has previously been because we don't have a representative body for a whole range of reasons. We haven't been leading the debate. And in fact, the media, you know, journalists, non-Indigenous journalists have been leading the debate and running the debate on our behalf. And and fairly young journalists with little experience in, you know, the Indigenous community apart from perhaps living in Darwin or, you know, is, you know, and seeing things for, you know, so anyway, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm sort of getting into different territory.
But I'm not sure. Maybe we should open up to some questions now. Is that? Okay.
Or comments? I mean,
or comments?
Can
Can
I ask Peter what he thinks? I mean, I know that's. Can I point at you, Peter, and say, can you say something, Peter? Because I think you have a view on this. Sorry,
Peter. Yeah,
Peter,
no, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, that's it. Now I know what to
do.
Dog,
me and Rachel.
Yeah.
Well. Speaking as a historian, I kind of wonder if Aboriginal leadership hasn't matured sufficiently for there not to be a visionary leader anymore. In other words, what we've arrived at is what the rest of Australia and, in fact, the rest of the world has arrived at. That is, we're all arguing with each other. I mean, half Australia thinks Mr Rudd's wonderful.
Exactly.
He's our visionary leader for those who want to follow him. The other half don't agree at all. They'd rather follow somebody else. If you're a Green, you follow somebody else altogether. And so he's our visionary leader. And it'd be too much to expect any one Australian leader to speak for all of us, or even you're lucky if you get anyone to speak for most of us. So that's one point. Maybe the great days of great protests have gone and won't come back because, partly for that reason, and partly because, as we all know, Aboriginal communities are not only accused of being dysfunctional, but you know, everybody's round with each other. Mm. And that's much more apparent now than it was in 1970. But maybe what we've got back to is what Aboriginal communities have always done, that is to say, rowed with each other. And that's what's emerging now. How do we get around that, or as an observer? Well, you know, the first of all, the Treaty Committee started in about 1975, and then later on Reconciliation Australia really encouraged local aspects. They had individual treaty committees set up all over the place, and then individual reconciliation groups who did a hell of a lot of good work all over the place. And that was the message that was coming through. Look, if you've got a problem locally, we'll fix it locally. And that would mean that even if you've got three or four Aboriginal groups rowing in the same town, it doesn't mean to say that combining for a common cause like, let's get look, in our town, there's not a single Aboriginal person in a front of house position talking to white people because of that's the local tallest policy of the town. People can still combine in a local level for that kind of thing. In other words, a local problem with a local solution. And I think because we don't hear about those things, we tend to underestimate how much has been achieved. It's kind of Rachel's point in a way, but not, I'd make it not just in a national level, and I certainly agree with that, but a hell of a lot's being achieved locally, as Uncle would say. I've seen that picture of the smoking ceremony at the Barrowville Theatre. It's so exciting to see that picture. I'm not sure it's in the exhibition or not, but it's amazing, you know, considering what Barrowville used to be like at the time that Rachel's dad led the students there. So that's two points to make, that maybe we can't expect that leadership anymore because, in fact, not because things have got bad, but because Aboriginal leadership's matured. We now have our individual leaders, in whoever we want to follow, we do follow. And we can't expect a unity anymore.
But we've got to. We've still got to try and get that unity.
That's a sad reflection, though, Pete. You know, with the problems that we face at community level, I mean, I think people have got to mobilise behind making change for health and certainly housing and unemployment. And, I mean, certainly we've got common goals that we need people to mobilise behind. I think you did mention that in that respect. So there's things that we've got to overcome and we've got to pull together on, you know.
Hi, my name is Barbara Paulson. I'm with the National Museum. One of the things I just wanted to ask, Rachel sort of alluding to it, but hasn't quite said it yet, and that is we're moving along, we are maturing as Indigenous people and representing our voice. When we protest our ideas and issues, we're doing it in a more sophisticated way. And Brother Black is an absolutely brilliant example of how that voice and how our issues are being expressed. You know, we had to protest in the street, or our, you know, forefathers, our uncles and aunties and everyone had to protest in the street because that's where their voice could be heard and would be heard. Whereas nowadays we don't have to, as Indigenous people across Australia, we don't have to protest in the street to get our voice heard. We can actually write up a press release. We can actually, you know, make a film where these stories and the subtext and the complexities of these issues get produced and then get, you know, put out there for people who are interested to go and watch it and have a insight and an understanding of the difference in culture. And you've got, so in the art forum, you've got all kinds of places now. So the protest and the issues that we want may be the same, and all the things that we need to achieve as individual communities, as people, can still move forward with the same issues, and we still want to say the same thing, but we have to do it in a new way, and we are doing it in a new way because we are doing it through art, through song, and through film, so through these new medias. So I just wanted to say that, you know, sort of Rachel's sort of alluding to it, but she hasn't actually sort of said that yet. So is it sort of something?
I suppose I wonder whether that's enough, though.
No.
I don't know whether that's enough. Like, I don't know whether, you know, it's very intangible. Like, you know, having people hang Aboriginal art in their house, like it happens everywhere now. You know, yes, that's lovely, but does that make any difference to, you know, the level of education achievement in remote communities or the level of funding to, you know, whatever housing in wherever it is, you know, like, yes, there's all these, you know, and I make films and people go, that's lovely, and, you know, I speak to probably a converted audience, you know, who already agree pretty much with me, learning a bit more. And, you know, I would like to think that that's enough because that's what I do, you know, and that's what a lot of people I know do. You know, Bangarra does their dance at the Opera House. It's beautiful. They tour around the world. It's great. But is that actually enough? See, I don't think it is enough. You know, I think that we need, you know, we still, and maybe we do have those people, and maybe they are doing it, and they probably are. I mean, maybe they are doing it on a state and federal level, you know, negotiating with, you know, senior ministers about, you know, access to, you know, like they've just decided that they're going to write a national language policy in the year 2009 when we have 50 languages that are expected to survive, you know, like, so there's still these sort of critical issues that, you know, I don't think we are getting the traction on enough. And I feel really inadequate that I'm not doing more about it, and I don't know who is, you know. I'm a bit ignorant about it. I know that there used to be, you know, a department that worked on that and battled with ministers about budgets, and maybe Tom Cowan was in there doing it, you know. But I don't really know who is. Who is banging down Rudd's door, and who is arguing, you know.
And how do you get
to
Rudd's
door? I don't know whether it's enough. I think it's a bit, we could get a bit comfortable with things too, you know.
Yep.
Maybe someone knows.
It's hard to see in the light standing on.
The exhibition has some great examples of both Aboriginal male and female leaders since the 1920s. The new Tom Calmer model, which is going to be, hasn't been accepted yet, but has positions for a male and female Aboriginal leader. Very difficult position to be in. Do any of the panel members have suggestions on who those leaders should be, or is that putting you on the spot?
Kathy Freeman, she's great.
Chock.
Chock. No. Don't think that's our role, is it?
Putting us on the spot a little bit. You know, I think there's a whole host of people out there that you'd think would be suitable for such positions. Uncle's got the experience on the Bowerville Council.
We got to be, have a thing you were mentioning earlier, you got to be squeaky clean before you can get on, or registered, yes. But aren't we registered already with the government? We all getting income.
I think there's a question.
Where?
G'day, John, from Newcastle. My name's Lee. I currently work in government, won't say where, but
you're the man.
I know.
Basically, first of all, your dad's a massive role model for a lot of Indigenous people were going through university at the moment. I just believe if it wasn't for what he did at Freedom Rides, probably the referendum wouldn't have happened, because it exposed racism in this country to the whole population. About Noel Pearson, his name's Muddy and a lot of black eyes because John Howard went to him as the go-to man. But him and another fellow who's involved in education in Queensland, Chris Sorra, both of them, especially Chris, they reckon the community needs to stand up. Every community is dysfunctional. Chris Sorra went to a town in Cherbourg in Queensland. The literacy rate was something like 26%. He got up to 94% in something like 5 years, because he made the community stand up and realise that they're accountable to their future generations. What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, now that's a great step that Chris took. I mean, as I mentioned earlier when I first set off, I mean, you look back at ATSIC and its destruction. The point was then that ATSIC was failing right across the country. That was not the case. I mean, I've worked in every state and territory. There are many areas where ATSIC was working. It's the same thing with our communities. I mean, the media focuses on, it's always Aboriginal communities are dysfunctional. There's many Aboriginal communities that have long histories of success where people are prospering and they're doing well. I mean, that's the reality. It's not that every Aboriginal community is dysfunctional. That really needs to be looked at. But again, the model that Chris has put up, and Chris is certainly a leader for the future, and as a person who's making great strides, so I really support what he's done there. And it just does go to show, if someone goes in there and does something like that, what can be done. In regards to that, I mean, I just look at what one person can do. I mean, years ago, I was out and working in Western New South Wales and Wilcannia, and I was talking to the Aboriginal liaison officer at the school, and they'd... Well, actually, when I drove into Wilcannia, there was a big gathering of blackfellas out on the edge of town, and I'd said to the liaison officer the next day, I said, what's the big do out the edge of town? He said, oh, he said, a young school teacher got killed. He said, the community's devastated. Now, the liaison officer told me, he said, like, people go to, this is 13, 14 years ago, teachers used to go into Wilcannia, they didn't really want to be there. You know, they'd be living in at Broken Hill or somewhere else, and they'd come in on Monday. They wouldn't bring their families with them. They'd be there, they'd speak to the kids, teach the kids in a very sort of clinical manner, no connection with them. Then they'd be in the car and back out of town. This guy arrived, a young guy, did the same sort of thing for the first 2 weeks, and then went to the liaison officer and says, look, this is not working. Now, the liaison officer said, I nearly fell over, that someone actually has that recognition. He said, it would be all right if I go down to the mish and speak to some of the families, the parents, about what we can do. He said, yes, you can. And he was going down there having cups of teas with people. It finished up, the young guy had his wife and family there. They'd go out with families. They'd spend the weekend camping together. The kids' improvement in school was dramatic. And it's just that recognition and the stance of one person to actually make a difference. And that can happen very, very quickly. And sadly, this young guy was killed in a car accident. So that was a devastating loss. But that does show Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who take that step can make a significant difference wherever they are. So, good point.
Does that answer your question?
But you're happy with it?
Oh, yeah, right. My name's Christine, and I work at the National Museum with Barbie and the rest of the team.
Can't hear you.
sorry, can you
not? Can't hear you. No, I'm a bit deaf. You need to speak up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to make a bit of a stand for history. I want to come back to something that Rachel said because, you know, I'm talking from the point of view of someone who, you know, went through the education system and knew absolutely nothing about Aboriginal people in this country at the end of my schooling. And so I know you guys are talking about sort of education of Aboriginal people, you know, within your own communities and your own young people. But also... one of the experiences that I had recently was when your series First Australians was on, Rachel, on television. And, you know, us who sort of work in the field of history were kind of getting together after each episode and going, oh, what did you think last night? So, you know, oh, yeah.
God,
well,
how
you know.
Terrifying.
I know. I shouldn't be telling
Thank
you this.
God,
this
I
is our secret. And we're sort of saying, oh, yeah, but
it's
I already
like
knew
the movie show on every night.
Exactly.
Five stars.
Yeah, the
stuff,
historian's no. review.
Yeah, God.
And we were kind of going, you know, but doesn't everybody know this? Yeah, you know. And then I had friends ringing me up from Melbourne going, oh, my God, did you see this thing on TV last night? Have you ever heard of a guy called Barak? And we're sort of going, it's an unbelievable level of ignorance in the community about our own history. So, I mean, I'm a Melburnian and I grew up near Healesville and knew nothing about my own history of my own place and our very tangled communities, because we're kind of all in this together. And so I guess this exhibition here, you know, I have to just sort of come back to that, is a really fantastic example of our own history and our, and what a great celebration of the heroes within our own history. And I'd really like to, you know, see that kind of history, biography and histories that are located in places that kids and people can relate to very personally, finding its way into the curriculum, and what sort of processes are in place for that to happen.
I can just comment on the fact that I'm currently co-editor of a new, and this is in New South Wales, with the Board of Studies, a new Aboriginal Studies textbook aimed at Year 11 and Year 12. And it is exactly that. I mean, contributors will be people like Larissa Berendt and John Mundine and John Lester and Carl Watson, Peter Reed and Heather Goodall, amongst others. I mean, it's aimed at students and teachers, of course, but also I think we'd be looking at TAFEs and things like that. But it's a different history. I mean, we want to look at making history exciting and dynamic. And there's so much Aboriginal history that's basically still not known. We know there's been incredible change since the 70s. And I was saying earlier to someone, when I come through school in the 60s, the only black fella I read about was Jackie. And he was a good black fella. But the reality is we have made incredible change since that time. But believe me, it's just the tip of the iceberg of what's still buried there as far as history is concerned, both in archives and national and state archives. But more importantly, a lot of those little local historical societies and museums in every bloody town in this country, and also in people's garages, wardrobes, suitcases, there's that much stuff. And also, of course, in oral memory, which is a critical one for us. There's a lot of stuff there that still has to come out. So this is critical to getting that message out. In this new textbook, we're looking at case studies. So I'm writing a thing. I'll be looking at Newcastle, where I was born and grew up in. People can actually relate to the area they're in. They can learn about Aboriginal culture and the history of where they are, and they can connect with that in a way that you don't find in a lot of textbooks in that way. And I think you're right. I mean, certainly we've said this before, the medium that Rachel's in. For me, history in the future, the big way to get out message, particularly to educate ignorance in wider Australia, is that medium, is movies. I mean, Rabbit Proof Fence and even Australia made a massive impact, you know, whether you liked them or you didn't. But the reality is it got people talking. And the same with First Australians. I mean, that's the medium we've got to utilise now. Historians in the United States have been using that medium for a long time. And that's something that blackfellas, we've just scratched the surface now. But that's where we've got to go. And that's the way you'll get that, you know, that message out there. So I hope that answers it.
Mulanjali Badesa. But my father's side was South Sea Island from Vanuatu, from the Slocky, from Vanuatu. I grew up on the Tweed. I was born in Coolangatta and lived in Tweed Heads, but I'm a true blue, follow the blues. And but I've lived in Brisbane. I went to school with Lester Bostock in Tweed Heads, but then I went 50 years ago, went looking for work with some girls and ended up in Brisbane and married Pickwick, Frank Pickwick, Troy's father. And that's my sister-in-law with me today. She's a Pickwick too, Netta Tyson. But I think we need a new leader, like Charlie Perkins, someone like Obama we can look up to. Right. We haven't got that. Yeah, we're just fighting amongst ourselves. Yeah. You talk to this fella, he's fighting with that fella. Yeah. I've got a white neighbour next to me. We've been fighting for 30, 40 years. 40 years. These kids started it, and I carried it on.
No, that's all wrong. It's all wrong.
Are you winning up?
It was Glenn, the other fella in Sydney. Him and Troy, they used to play football in the front yard and back, and then I bought some rose bushes and planted them in the front yard. Yep. And no, next minute they planted them in the backyard. They said, "You don't have rose flowers in the football field." Troy wouldn't get out of when they're playing cricket.
That's enough. Yeah, no, that's
tell
enough.
Us some more about
okay,
it. Now.
Okay.
hang on.
And this one would bowl to Glenn, the brother.
He chased him down the road with the bat.
Anyway,
this is
questions.
But
my mother actually, she's with there is so much that, you know, I mean, I studied for many years, and it's something that I think that we have highlighted so much about Indigenous people that is, there's so much more that we can do, really. And, you know, I mean, I've looked at stuff in the museum down here, and we have a whole swag of objects there that's just, you know, physics. It's engineering. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's something that the Australia should actually look at and appreciate, and so much more constructively. But my mother here has been a wonderful woman. She's been a woman here that I'm exceptionally proud of, and raised a lot of kids, and done it under extreme duress and hardship. And it's something that they're the stories that we should be looking at.
Yeah.
And because, you know, it's something that it's not quite highlighted as well as it could be.
Well said, Bob. I think Arnie's touched on an important point too. Like, you know, we see Barack Obama in the United States today, and having had the opportunity to look at lots of historical connections between African Americans from the 1920s right through to the 60s and 70s for me, and even up to the present day, you realise that what my thoughts are, that we're probably about 70 or 80 years behind African-Americans where they are today. I mean, I think there is an emerging middle class in Aboriginal Australia today. We are having people move into government positions, into more high sort of official positions and that sort of thing, but I still think we're about that 70-odd years behind.
What about the Native Americans?
The Native Americans, I mean, this is an interesting thing. I mean, you look at... people actually always say that to me because I'm, you know... You know, I've done so much stuff in the US and looking at the African American stuff, because in the 20s, I mean, the Aboriginal political movement here connected with the African Americans primarily because they were on the docks and they were meeting African Americans. So they had conversations with people they come into contact with their ideology and had access to their manifestos. There was nothing in the Australian newspapers about Native Americans in the 1920s. There was an awful lot about Marcus Garvey, the baddest black fella on the planet, you know, in the political group that he was leading in the United States at that time. Similarly, in the 1960s, when Charlie emulated Martin Luther King, I mean, television made a massive impact in this country in the 60s. If you think back and you see that image of that time, it started to appear in people's lounge rooms. You had the civil rights movement in the US. You had this enormous divisive war in Vietnam in your lounge room, and it wasn't censored then. People were getting blown up and shot down and all that sort of stuff. So that made an impact. The Black Panthers, Malcolm X, all of those connections, and I mean, it was to the Black Panthers that Aboriginal people in Redfern and Sydney sort of related to. Again, the Native American experience wasn't there. The connections weren't there. Historically, there's a mirror image as far as Native Americans are concerned with Aboriginal Australia. The whole history of it, the dispossession, the invasion, the kids being taken away, the massacres. It's just a mirror image. And it's still there today. I mean, I've had the good fortune to travel quite a bit to the US in recent years, and I mean, the Native American experience isn't covered by the press. I mean, we get a lot more press here than they get over there. I mean, a lot of our stuff might be bad, 90% of it, but the reality is we do get a lot of coverage, where in the US they don't. So that is a difference there. I'd actually hoping to do a comparative study with early Aboriginal political movements and Native American movements, which I've gathered a lot of material on, and I'm still looking to try and uncover if there are any connections there. Believe me, if there are, I'll find them.
Hi, I'm Samantha from Canberra. Thanks very much for all the number of issues that you've all covered previously, but two comments, and if you'd just care to say something about them as well. Probably one is that I think we're all leaders as well too in our own rights, and there's that diversity. Some of us might be leaders in health, education, and so on. Some of us might just be plain mums and leaders and role models for our younger kids and the next generation to come through. But that we should be supporting others as well, our peers, but also supporting and mentoring the next generation through at all levels, and I think at all ages. And secondly, not to forget the Torres Strait Islander stories and voices as well too, because more often than not, the main focus obviously is on the Aboriginal stories as well, but that the Torres Strait has had forms of protests such as the 1936 Maritime Strike, and also in 1992, the Mabo decision as well too.
Yeah, no, we're aware of that. I don't think we're, I wouldn't suggest that we're overlooking the Torres Strait Islander movement at all, and no one could forget what Mabo and his co-claimants, Dave Passy and others, achieved. So please don't think that we're giving an Aboriginal isolated view on that, because that's certainly not the intention. I think we are all leaders and we do all must take responsibility for our own lives and our own children, but that doesn't negate the fact that, like any community, we need leadership. And when it comes down to it, you know, who is the person that you are going to walk after in the street? You know, who is the person that you are going to trust to go and speak to someone important on your behalf? You know, are you going to allow someone, you know, who are you going to follow? You know, if someone rings you up and says, right, come on, Rachel, we are going to go and stand outside here and stand out there for, you know, we're going to camp there for 3 months until we have achieved this thing not happening, you know? You need people to motivate and unite and draw together a people and to create change. And that's what we need. We are all leaders, yes, but, you know, you need leadership to lead a people.
Point, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you can't underestimate that, I don't think.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, one more? Okay.
I hate to say this, but I'm a con from Canberra. The about 40 years ago, I had the honour of meeting what I thought at the time a remarkable man, and still do, was Rachel's father. And we sort of ran through the number of Indigenous people who had post-secondary qualifications at that stage. And I think Charlie knew them all. And the reason for that was because there weren't very many at all. Mm. And I believe today there are about 30,000 Indigenous people with post-secondary qualifications.
15,000 and 8,500 currently in
okay,
study.
Okay, thanks. And still, you know, many thousand percent improvement of what it was like in very early 1970s. At that time, I think Aboriginal people owned 0% of Australia, and I think the figure around about now would be about 17 or 18%. A huge achievement. Mm-hmm. And so I think I have to say personally, I don't feel reconciled, and I actually don't expect to feel reconciled before I die. I think there are far too many issues that I feel terribly uncomfortable with. But at the same time, I think there's been tremendous progress has been made. And in the face of almost indescribable obstacles and challenges. So really, in my mind, a magnificent achievement. Yeah. I'd like to just ask each of the panel members briefly. We've heard the road mentioned, and I believe that a lot of the arguments between Indigenous leaders at the moment are about different pathways to the end of the road. And I'm just wondering if each of you would mind just briefly saying, what do you see? What would the end of the road be like? What would it be like?
Ladies first. Well, I think the end of the road would be a society that understands its Indigenous and settler history as a shared identity that represents the nation of people, and that is a shared Australian heritage. That there is a pride in that heritage. I think that the end of the road would also be that Indigenous people have equivalent standards of life expectancy, health, employment, and standard of living that we still haven't achieved. And I think that the end of the road would be a, you know, a society that that embraces, you know, I mean, I'm sort of repeating myself, but embraces Indigenous culture, you know, that you can be equal and distinct at the same time. So, I mean, I think, and there's a whole other range of things, like, you know, I'd love, you know, Indigenous language to be revitalised across the country, and I'd, you know, I'd love a whole range of things. I'd love a, you know, I'd love an Indigenous radio service and a television service in each town. I'd love, you know, but broadly speaking, you know, those are the, you know, to be socially, you know, equal with the same quality of life, and to be, you know, accepting and embracing, you know, the dual Indigenous and settler identities and heritage.
There may be, you know, an Aboriginal Prime Minister and a full cabinet. And but no, I certainly back up what Rachel has just said, which pretty much covered what I was going to say, but certainly to the equality and justice and make up that those measurements of socioeconomic disadvantage, I mean, really have to be, you know, set to and push back where we're at that level playing field. And again, I go back to my grandfather all those years ago, I mean, demanding enough land for each and every Aboriginal family in the country. And if his demands had been met 85 years ago, we would already be in an economic situation today. We would be already prospering from decades of being able to sustain ourselves and build upon. So, yeah, I think that's the position for me.
Well, I agree in principle with the bell speaker. I still think we've got a long way with equality in this country. Holistically, it's just that we've got to, you know, we've still got to work with the undercurrents aspects out there, you know. A lot of good people in here, there's a lot of people who mean well in here, but there's a lot of people out there who want to destroy everything and any little bit of what Aboriginals have achieved and Torres Strait Islanders achieved, you know? And you'll have that element out there. And definitely there are, you know? I, for one, like, I'm in council. I see the remnants of our culture that we've got left. Ain't much. But is it enough? You know, far as I'm concerned, the culture has been stripped, realistically, in big ways. You know, because a lot of my grandfather and my father, their dancing stopped between the 1930 to 1938. You know, the dancing stopped. Why did the dance stop? Because of white man law. You know, they weren't allowed to talk to or speak, or sing, or dance, you know. And I'm very hurt about that because that was taken from me by white man law, you know. Yeah. But we've got to adhere to them, that law, today, you know. Yeah. We still got to sit back. We say we come this far, you know. Come on, guys, are we kidding ourselves? I'm no kidder. I believe we still two steps back here. Yeah, you know, we're no better than we was 200. You know, I can get emotional about this, but I feel, you know, I gave an address on. I was restricted on what I had to say at on the 26th of January, in when I first got in council. So I got up there and spoke. They wanted me to do welcome, you know, and do dance and all that. So I got up and spoke in the first language of this land, gave a welcome in this first language of this country. Then I interpreted with the second language of this, which is English, you know. So, you know, how far have we come? Not very far. I'm sorry, but, you know, there is a lot of people that out there will be pulling the rugs from us. You know, how far has Mr. Kalma? How far has he got, you know? I've been looking at, in the last 2 years, 5 years, I've been looking at our leaders. Where are we, you know? You said, how many, 1,500?
15,000.
15,000 leaders out there.
15,000 university graduates.
Graduates, okay. So are they classified as leaders or what?
Well, I don't know. What do you think? Potential leaders.
Potential leaders. Okay. If you can get them all to contact me and we can talk about how to help bring equality and justice to our people in this country, I guarantee you I'll give you the fair go, because I'm not, you know, I'm lobbying for the position to be the leader of our people. But, you know, because I'm fair and I'm just. You know, I'm the most honest councillor in my shire, local government level, you know? Yeah?
That's great.
Why did you laugh?
I think we've just gone over a little bit over time.
Sorry about that. I get the most carried away, you know.
But before
it's my only opportunity. No, sorry.
You should have your own TV show.
Like Joe Anderson, yes, yeah. On that TV show.
Oh, be like Oprah of Australia.
Something like that. But look, before we finish, we've got an example of contemporary, if you like, Aboriginal political protest, and we've got a resolution here of the Get Up, Stand Up Forum at the National Museum of Australia, and Rachel's actually written this up as we sat across over lunch together, and it certainly comes from us, and certainly with your backing, we hope. But here's what it says: the below speakers and those gathered at the National Museum of Australia's forum, Get Up, Stand Up, call upon Minister Garrett to exercise his discretionary powers and appoint an Indigenous person with relevant expertise to the board of the National Museum of Australia. We further note with concern that since the opening of this institution, no Indigenous person has held such a position, which is remiss in a national cultural institution. Agreed on behalf of those present, John Maynard, Rachel Perkins, Shannon Williams and Martin Ballengarry, signed the 10th of September. So we hope you may support our resolution. And look, just to close, look, I'd like to thank everybody for coming along and attending today, and it's been great to have you here. And also I have to give some kudos to the National Museum of Australia for having us here for a couple of days and the wonderful exhibition they've put on, and certainly Jay and Troy and Carolyn and all the staff have worked very, very hard. But hopefully they'll be able to bang on some doors and make something happen here as far as this is concerned. So thanks very much, everybody.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.